Who was it who said they wanted to hear some Afterglow on Infants on Thrones?
Praise to the man who communed with Jehovah, Jesus anointed that prophet and seer.
Holy crap, you guys. You will not believe the summons that we just received for our podcast. Oh my gosh, take a listen to this.
To the attention of the AMPC, Anti-Mormon Podcasting Community.
Is that us?
Information has been laid by Phil Thomas of 3 Broadbottom Lane, Upper Titlington-on-the-Water, Northwestshire. By virtue of his office as second councillor in the bishopric of the Upper Titlington-on-the-Water Second Ward. Before me, the undersigned. That between 20th of June 2012 and 14th of March 2014...
Hey, that's how long we've been doing this podcast.
Digital audio recordings of an anti-Mormon and defamatory nature were broadcast, in the which you are evidenced to have knowingly and dishonorably revealed yourselves to be in violation of sacred oaths and covenants, in flagrant breach of English common contract law.
Holy cow, there are 7 claims made against us.
Namely that...
1.
You have violated your covenant of wearing the garments of the holy priesthood.
2.
You have violated the law of obedience.
3.
You have desecrated the law of sacrifice.
I don't know about that. We put a lot of time into this podcast. 4.
You have held in contempt the tokens, names, and signs received in the temple that day.
Maybe, but can you prove that? 5.
You have flouted the law of the gospel.
The law of the gospel? The gospel's good news. There's like a law of good news? 6.
You have ground underfoot the law of chastity.
Well, not underfoot. What, 7?
And you have utterly shat upon the law of consecration.
No, that can't be us. We don't take donations.
Furthermore, we find the anti-Mormon podcasting community guilty of the following minor offenses. Loud laughter and evil speaking of the Lord's anointed. Doubting faith before doubting doubts. Leaving the church, but not leaving it alone. Peddling things that are true, but not useful. Soothsaying. Consorting with known intellectuals, feminists, and gays. Omitting the general authority's middle initials. Mingling the philosophies of men with humor. And general nincompoopery with malice aforethought.
Well, I don't know how we're going to get around this.
You are therefore summoned to appear before Cock Foster's Magistrates Court, 347 Cock Foster's Road, London Borough of Barnet, London, EN40DZ, UK, at 9 a.m. in Courtroom 1 to answer the said information. Failure to attend may result in a warrant being issued for your arrest.
Phew, I thought he was going to say a public flogging.
The Right Honorable Rufus Cavendish Smythe, QC.
It is coming full circle. We are under attack.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Welcome to a special edition of Infants on Thrones. You know, we spent so much time and energy with the Tom Phillips story that we just felt sort of obligated to discuss the outcome of that right here. Now, we don't have Tom to come on, and we don't have any inside information, so this is really just myself, Glenn Ostlund, and Jake, and Randy, and Matt, and Scott walking through what we think we know and what we think it means. But we don't really know what we're talking about, so... In other words, it's just business as usual. And, oh yeah, did you hear that summons that we have against us? Oh my heck. Now that's Utah Mormon speak for wow. We're going to have to do something to prepare against this counterattack in the wake of the summons dismissal. So that's what you can expect to hear today as traitors and tyrants now fight him in vain. With Infants on Thrones.
He can plan for his brethren.
Okay.
Death
All right.
cannot
Stop.
conquer
Stop.
the hero
Stop.
Death.
Sheesh. Honestly, I don't know what we can add. The only thing that I think that we can add is just try to bring all of these things that are being written today into one place that can be consumed audibly, you know, and try to make sense of it. But we don't have any, like, special insider knowledge. Like, several people asked, you know, what do you guys think about this? But who cares? I mean, we don't have any special knowledge about this stuff.
Right. No, I agree.
Even though we got a couple lawyers on here, and Scott and I are legally trained, that provides no insight into this. Our opinions are no more valid than anyone else's.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And so the ruling that came down by the chief magistrate, Senior District Judge Howard Riddle,
who I'm assuming was wearing a wig at the time. That's just how I have it in my mind.
Oh, yeah, I think they do. Right?
Powdered wig, whole get up, chair's like 25 feet tall.
And big jowls, yeah, like
huge
Holland jowls.
Right.
You think the carpet matches the drapes with those jowls?
Oh, gosh.
The meat curtains. Please tell me we were recording.
Holland. Oh, boy. Okay, so this thing's 3 pages long. We've got like some cell phone pictures of it, is what it looks like, basically. And the gist of it is the case is being dismissed.
Yeah, and then there's all these things on RFM, and I don't know if you want to get into that. What Tom has said that he's not done. He's going to push forward with this, but I don't know. I wish that we could get him on and talk to him about it again. You haven't heard from him, have you, since we released the first one?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard anything from him. Sent him a couple of emails, but. Yeah. I understand, because one of the things that's in here is whether or not the litigation is vexatious.
Yeah.
Which, for my, like Matt said, you know, yeah, we're lawyers, but vexatious, as far as I understand it, my little bit of research means something a little bit different in the UK. So my understanding of what vexatious means is basically that the point of this case was basically to generate bad PR rather than to actually seek the relief that was offered under the law.
Yeah, right.
So the purpose of the case was just to be a black eye on the church, and that they really weren't going for, you know, the kind of relief that they sought. And so one of the elements of that is the extent to which, at least I would think a relevant element of that is the extent to which Tom Phillips had gone out and kind of drummed up this negative publicity about the case.
But my understanding, I mean, you know, I read through those threads on Recovery from Mormonism discussion boards, and, you know, that Steve Benson posted this stuff that Tom gave him and said, you know, I trust you explicitly, go ahead and post this stuff. And the reason he was doing it was because the case was withdrawn. And if I remember right, there was some language in there that if the case was going to move forward and continue to be heard, then Tom would be a little bit more cautious, but, you know, because he wouldn't want to look like he was meddling with the case at all. But now, since it's been thrown out, he's free to share all of the, you know, 120 pages that he, you know, gave to Judge, was it Roscoe, initially, and that Judge Riddle had and looked through. You know, so now at some point that's going to be made public. I mean, we haven't seen anything that's in it, but, you know, when I looked through these 3 pages that was Judge Riddle's response, I started writing down like what my main takeaways were. And ironically, I have a list of 7 that wasn't planned. but the first one that I noticed was, and I think we touched on this in our part 3, but I didn't go back to listen to see exactly how much detail we went into this, but that those 7 claims aren't directly connected to Monson. So you can't find anywhere that he has made any of those 7 statements very clearly. And I remember, you know, when I was wanting to kick off that part 3 in kind of a creative way, I went on to LDS.org, because I go on there and I mine audio from the videos and things. You know, you can word search and find things. I didn't spend a ton of time, but I couldn't find what I wanted to find with, you know, Monson's voice talking about the translation of the Book of Abraham, you know, being written from the hand of Abraham. I couldn't find the things about the Book of Mormon and Lehi and Nephi and, you know, all those seven claims that were made. I really couldn't find a direct quote to use for our podcast. And what I think Judge Riddle was saying is that he couldn't find a direct connection that Monson had actually said these things either. It was just because he's the president of the organization, he caused them to be preached that way or taught that way.
Well, yeah. So what it says, the part that it says is, to this end, I've read the 120 pages provided by the prosecutor. I invited Mr. Byrd to take me to the relevant pages. In the paperwork, I find assertions that Mr. Monson caused to be made statements of fact which are untrue, assertions that the president of the church, Mr. Monson, was responsible for the statements of the church, numerous assertions that Mr. Monson knew false statements were being made, and assertions that church doctrine makes the particular statements of error. It would be relatively easy to state explicitly that Mr. Monson has made these statements or these specific representations and when and how the misrepresentations were made. This has not been done.
So that's basically what I just said, right?
Right.
I got that right. Yeah.
This was my main takeaway. And what I was surprised is that they seemed to, in that finding, dismiss, just out of hand, the idea that he could be responsible as the corporation's sole or as the head
right.
of the corporation. And that part I was, I guess, a little surprised about, that I think there was a little more there. Or some substance to say that, of course, he's responsible for statements made by formal, formal sources. They have to be attributed to him. They have to be attributed to somebody. And if somebody, then it has to be him.
Well, but maybe not. I mean, because criminal liability for corporations is different. You know, you can't. A corporation can commit criminal acts, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the CEO or that the shareholder or that a person within the company themselves is going to be responsible for it. That might just mean that the corporation is going to be responsible for it as a whole. So if this is, and I don't know, again, we're flying in the dark here to some extent because we don't know right. what's in these 120 pages. We don't know enough about British law. How this is going to be applied, but the judge here certainly isn't making it clear in terms of how that corporate structure is being handled.
Well, and to me, this goes to my third point that I made. So can we go to the second one and then go to the third
sure,
one?
Just follow. Let's go through Glenn's seven.
We've got to follow Glenn's outline.
Well,
yeah. Sorry, I skipped number two there.
Yeah. Right. I mean.
We don't have this outline, by the way.
Somebody's got to keep the lawyers in line. Right. Well, it follows the flow of the letter, really. I mean, because he makes the statements that you just read, Scott, and then says, even if there was a direct connection, and this is that second point, it's not clear that Monson was intentionally dishonest. So, like, first of all, he couldn't tie Monson to saying directly any of those seven things. But even if he could, there was no way of saying that Monson knew that they were false, but he's presenting them as true. Like, there's no clear evidence
right.
there.
Or, he said there's an or in there. It's that the basis for the complaint that he made them dishonestly or intending a gain or a loss is too tenuous. And there, again, is your connection to the connection to tithing, this connection to some sort of a loss or a gain. Right.
Well, I think go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Jake.
Well, I think this really kind of speaks to, and I wasn't on the initial, I wasn't officially part of the quorum when you had your initial the series with him. But I think it kind of speaks to a misunderstanding about kind of the null hypothesis of this case, where it seemed to me that Tom Phillips was kind of looking at it in a sense that it was guilty until proven innocent. Like that, if he alleged fraud, then he'd have to prove that he wasn't, that he did believe those things. Where in this case, it looks like it's being looked at in the opposite lens, where it's not clear that he was being intentionally dishonest. Therefore, we assume that he wasn't, or that he does believe those things.
Right. You can't call Monson to give testimony and then say, aha, see, you're guilty. You have to prove it independent of him ever getting up there testifying. There was a bit of that is once we get Monson there, once he appears, that's when that's when we're going to kind of prove this. I think there was an element of that.
Yeah. Just to be clear, I don't, based on my reading, I don't think that it has to be intentionally dishonest. I haven't seen anywhere in the statute where it says intentionally dishonest. It's just that he made them dishonestly. Maybe you guys think that's splitting hairs, but that could be fairly important.
But I think that was something. And by the way, Randy's just joined us. Hey, Randy.
Hey, guys.
So, hey, Randy's here.
Yeah. But I mean, that was something that I think we raised in our part three, that that was a concern to me, that how do you make that connection between this is where I think the whole thing fell apart. You know, like last Friday, we were all kind of watching on pins and needles as, you know, court reporter or whoever it was, you know, passing notes and giving live updates, you know, with this, what was it, 6.5 hour summons update, and that the church kept hammering, you know, that it's belief. It's not fact, it's belief. And everybody was really excited about, like, wow, look, the church, the lawyers are admitting that these aren't really facts anymore, that this is just beliefs. But it seems
a bunch of non-Mormon British lawyers.
Sure, yeah. But it seems like it worked, because in this three-page dismissal, whatever you call it, he's talking about an attack on religion. He's talking about this is an attack on beliefs, that Tom Phillips is manipulating the legal system to attack a religion, to attack the beliefs. He's repeating what the church lawyers said, or at least what was reported, what I was getting out of that. And nowhere in here does he even use the word corporation or corporate soul, you know? So, like, what I took away when we had our discussion with Tom Phillips a couple of weeks ago was that you can't look at this as a church. You've got to look at this as a corporation. And these aren't beliefs. These are claims about a product that a sales force are making, you know? So if you frame it in that corporate structure, then you can allege fraud. But to me, it doesn't seem like Judge Riddle bought that at all. That's not in his language anywhere. It's all about religion, and it's about like a personal attack on President Monson as the head of a church. And he says church several times, never says corporation, never says corporate soul.
Well, and I think that's kind of the truth of the matter. It's like, okay, so the church has structured itself to be a corporation, but really, what is it? In reality, it's a religion. It's a church. No matter how you structure it, corporately or through for tax purposes and whatnot.
Yeah, and so you have Judge Riddle coming out and saying this is vexatious. He addresses that question and he says it is. Right? Am I misreading that, guys?
No, I think he was very, very strong.
Yeah, he's very strong, and there's a paragraph on the third page, the second paragraph down. I'm just going to read the whole thing. It is inevitable that the prosecution would never reach a jury, even if Mr. Monson chooses to attend. To convict, a jury would need to be sure that the religious teaching of the Mormon Church are untrue or misleading. That proposition is at the heart of the case. No judge in a secular court in England and Wales would allow that issue to be put to a jury. It is non-justiciable. So, yeah, he's throwing out the entire idea that this can even be tested in the court, which is one of the concerns that we all had. Certainly, that's the same case in the United States. But Tom Phillips seemed pretty certain that that was not going to be the way that it was ruled.
Yeah, so. And maybe that comes from his discussions with the previous judge. Is it Roscoe, if I'm saying that right?
Yeah.
It's Judge Roscoe?
Doesn't Roscoe sound like a redneck? Yeah. Yeah.
Honorable
Roscoe Pico trying
to... Wouldn't you just love to wipe that egg-sucking grin off of old Roscoe's face?
Yeah. I think to me that was kind of a failure of last Friday, that they didn't get this point across. Like, they weren't able to spin the story to Judge Riddle the way that they were getting it from the way, at least how I understood that Judge Roscoe had it.
And it's interesting that they weren't able to do that, and because they should have been able to parse out and say, you know, this is a sure, it's a religion that owns, and go through the numbers. They have this many buildings. They have this much property. They have
all their holdings.
Yeah, all the, you know, they have that we know of. You know, the cattle farm, all the for profit businesses that they own. This mall, the Polynesian Cultural Center. I mean, we're talking about just a vast corporate holdings. And and so that would have been important. But then what's interesting about the holding is it does seem to think that even the small, obvious cults that can't be questioned either. Well, and if this metaphysical belief can't be tested or can't be taken to court, then what about another one that even might be even more clearly false and more clearly fraudulent or made up?
Scientology
seems to bulletproof it. If you claim it as a religion, claim it as a belief.
Right. And that's where I think there was a failure on, you know, Friday's deliberations, that it never got out of that realm of belief. And I think that Judge Riddle even states this. He says something about that Tom Phillips' aim is at the beliefs and the doctrines of the Mormon Church, and it's not clear about what the wrongdoing is.
Right.
Like, where is the wrongdoing? We're not focusing on the wrongdoing. We're focusing on these seven different beliefs that they can be proven false or true or whatever.
And they're right. He's right about that.
Yeah.
I mean, he is. So recently, within the last year, that Mormon mission president handbook came out, where that seemed to lay out an intentional, at least defrauding of the tax codes in many countries, at least in many countries. And that seemed to be an easier one maybe to go at, is saying this is set up to specifically try to get mission presidents to not disclose certain assets. So that almost seems to be one that would be better, that is outside the realm of beliefs. And at some point, if you listen to that, look at that RFM posting, Tom does think that he has some ammunition that is outside of beliefs and is solely financial. I don't know if it's that one or some other ones, but again, there's another teaser of there might be something else out there. But I guess my statement to Tom would have been, well, then lead with that one. If you have more, I hate when people say, oh, well, I've got other stuff out there. Well, yeah. Why didn't you hit with that as well?
Well, and again, we don't know what's in those 120 pages, and that he did go through a pretty intense grilling and vetting process for a few months from October to January with Judge Roscoe. So to me, I think that's where he gets his sense of certainty and conviction there with that experience. And it just didn't translate to Judge Riddle.
Yeah.
But that happens all the time. But it happens all the time. And it might not be a failure of the team on Friday. It might be just an unwillingness of this particular judge to deal with this in that realm.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I read it. And I think that's why his opinion was so strong.
Yeah.
Well, you lawyers have dealt with this in the past. I mean, is it really kind of a crapshoot what judge you get?
Yes.
Absolutely.
All the time. I deal with this. Pretty much all the trials that I do are bench trials, and I mostly practice in two courts. So, and it's in a certain, you know, certain realm of law. So there's really like 10 judges that I'm in front of, like, over and over and over and over and over again. And I can tell you, on this issue, this judge thinks this way. This issue, a different judge thinks this way. If we get assigned a certain judge and it's a certain case, we might file a notice of change of judge. We get to do that one time. I mean, it's common. It's always something. Whenever other attorneys, you know, in our office, we talk about cases, and one of the first questions we always ask is, who's your judge? Because it's just it's super important, because they just have different dispositions.
This is why the Gadianton robbers were so influential, because they were able to infiltrate the judges and get in on their secret combinations. Are you guys with me?
Boom, boom,
yeah.
Yeah, totally. I get it. Yeah. I get it. That's a good joke. It's a good joke.
I'm serious,
funny.
Man.
Funny.
It was for our day. For our
And the Gadiantons. The Gadiantons actually existed.
That was written for our day, man.
They totally existed.
But This was that's actually relevant. I mean, my question to Tom at when we interviewed him was, "What if this judge disagrees with you? Is there a review process?" And I remember him saying yes, and I don't remember the answer as being really, really yes, that there is another judge you can take it to say, you know, no, this was incorrect. This shouldn't have been dismissed. And what I found interesting, I guess, and this is where I don't understand it, is what was dismissed was the summons. That's what really was dismissed. So it seems like it wouldn't necessarily prevent him from bringing another complaint or amending it and doing something else, which he again said they think is possible, not just in England, but in other countries that have this similar fraud act.
Well, and I think he misinterpreted the law, you know, that they put in both summonses that failure to attend on Monson's part could lead to an arrest warrant, and that's not the case. And so that was a technical inaccuracy that Judge Riddle mentioned in there. They could have been thrown out just on that technicality, and I think that Tom was planning on reissuing those summonses anyway with the proper language in there. But, you know, we've referenced a couple of times that Judge Riddle came down really hard, really harsh language. And my last two points here are kind of connected. That one, Judge Riddle is convinced that Tom Phillips is manipulating the judicial system to attack religious beliefs. That's harsh. And that Tom is abusing the process of the court for this. You know, I mean, to come out and be that clear in the language, to me, seems kind of devastating. And from what I understand of Tom, he's just, hey, we're going forward. This is not a setback. This is just the beginning. Wait till you see where we go with this.
How can it be just a beginning? It's not like somebody was convicted and they can appeal. It's thrown out. So what is his recourse from this point?
They would restructure the approach somehow. But this is, to me, my last point that I saw in here was a very clear warning. I think a clear warning to Tom. The Judge Riddle saying, you could get up to 2 years imprisonment for pulling this kind of shit, and I'm not going to make this decision right now. But it seems like
if you keep this up,
that's how I would read that. That, you know, be happy that you got away without 2 years of imprisonment here, and be careful. Did you guys read that way?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and refiling. I mean, if he's talking about like it being, you know, just the beginning, he files again. Like, what does he think is going to happen? I don't know. It seems dangerous.
Well, I think he could. He's got to do a couple things. He's got to get it outside of the realm of belief, and hone that and sharpen that down a lot more to provide a little more clarity. And one thing is to make it Mormon specific. I think there was a real error, again, in putting these global beliefs of Adam and Eve and the earth being 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, how do you prove that wrong? Even if you say, well, Adam and Eve, well, you know, clearly didn't exist. Well, really? At some point there were two first humans, even if you accept, you know, believe or accept evolution as fact, which it is. But who's to say that there wasn't, you know, this metaphor or this story doesn't really relate to people? I mean, that was a misstep, and I still maintain that was a strategic misstep. So we'd have to take it outside of the realm of belief, number one, and he's got to hone it down to where it pertains to, where it's tied into finances.
Well, and I think it's the wrongdoing. I mean, like, you've got to hone into what is the wrongdoing and not make it personal to President Monson, you know, but get it into this corporate. Like, if you're talking about Monson, you're not talking about the president of a church. You're talking about a corporate soul. And to me, that was completely missing in what Judge Riddle ruled on here. That he was talking about things that are personable to Mr. Monson. The reason Monson is there is because he is the church. You know, he's the corporate soul for all the holdings.
Right.
And that, I think it's that lack of a connection of wrongdoing there that was that would need to be.
But that could have been in the 100 and I'm going to call it the 116 pages because I know that that could have been in the 100 and
yeah,
however many pages, and we just don't know. And if Judge Riddle just wanted to kind of ignore that, then It would certainly be within his purview to do so.
I keep asking, what about Judge Roscoe? I mean, this is no small thing that a summons was issued. This is no small thing that a judge issued it. And that's the one thing that I do think bulletproofs Phillips from this whole, oh, you could be charged with the costs, the fees you will bear, and the potential for 2 years is the fact that it was approved by a judge. There was
the judge pushed this forward, not Tom.
Right.
How could he be held culpable? But I really think that at this point, given the reading of the judgment, that Tom would be wise to just drop it and let it go.
Yep.
Now, so have you gone through your 7 points yet, Glenn?
Yep.
So we're killing Tom a little bit.
Yeah.
But
we're not killing him. We're being kind of realistic.
Well, no, I know. We were supportive. I mean, we were somewhat optimistic after listening to him. I think we were somewhat critical in the third episode where we talked about it.
And after the whole first day of the hearing, you know, the judge listened to 6.5 hours of stuff.
Right.
So why would we not be optimistic at that point?
But and that's the thing. Let's talk about a couple of the, I guess, things that come out of this that might bode well for Tom, or might actually ultimately hurt or be a bad thing for the church. Because I think there are a number of things that did come out of this that where the church, this is not just a one-sided win for the church. I mean, the fact that a judge engaged this for a day and forced the church to even address these issues and didn't just dismiss it out of hand is something. They forced the church to take a couple of positions that I think can be used down the road. Number one, that these are not statements of fact. They had to make that statement. They certainly formally made that claim that these are not statements of fact. These are merely beliefs.
Well, but what is that? I mean, you're talking about this could be used down the line. Used for what?
Yeah, how?
Particularly that one less so, but let's talk about the second one that they did. And this, I think, is a little more significant, is tithing dollars are optional. They are voluntary. You can't just say that tithing dollars are voluntary and then attach some punitive something that's punitive to them. So, you know, from their perspective, they say, well, yeah, people can certainly choose whether or not to pay tithing, and then there are consequences if they don't, such as they don't get these saving ordinances, such as they don't get to attend weddings, such as they don't get to bless their children, they don't get to participate in certain in other ordinances. You can't do that and call it voluntary.
Sure, you can. No, yeah, you can.
You can't, and here's why.
Absolutely, you can.
Under that theory, paying taxes is voluntary.
Yeah.
You just suffer consequences of imprisonment and other things if you fail to do it.
Yeah, no. But imprisonment's real in this life.
Yeah.
It's a difference. Right.
No, but voluntary means something. I can't say, hey, guys, join my club. Join my join the Lions Club or whatever club I'm going to join, the Infants on Thrones. All you have to do is pay dues. But it's voluntary.
It's optional. However,
it's optional and it's voluntary. But if you don't pay dues, here are the consequences. You don't get to participate in our meetings. You don't get a vote. You don't get to do these things. That is not voluntary. Language means something. Statements mean something. And the next person that is not given a temple recommender, is not able to attend their child's wedding or something else that is punitive, they need to point to this and say, see, this is why it's fraudulent. This is why it's bullshit. Yeah,
right. And I think if somebody was able to do that and say, this is the wrongdoing and this is what I'm suing for, I mean, that's a different case than I think what Tom's doing, because it's more specific and it's based on that punitive action or whatever, you know, what the wrongdoing is. But I know that as a believer myself, whenever people would take this kind of reasoning against me and say it's not optional, I would say exaltation is optional. The celestial kingdom is optional. You're getting your going through the temple. All these things are optional. Yeah, there's certain things that you need to do to be able to be worthy to be there. But this is all about choice and free agency, and all these things are optional. Being married in the temple, it's a choice. You don't have to be married in the temple.
You don't have to go to the Celestial Kingdom.
You don't have to go to the Celestial Kingdom. There's other places to go.
Yeah, and they're pretty cool, according to Joseph Smith.
According to Joseph Smith, they're cool. It is optional, but of course, we strive for the best, you know, Celestial Kingdom or bust or whatever you want to say about that. But to me, I can see from a believing Mormon's perspective how they would continue to insist that tithing is optional and feel completely right in doing that. And like how you would argue that, how you would show that there's wrongdoing or that there's compulsion to pay tithing and that it's fraud, I think it's tricky. I think that's really, really tricky.
Well, I don't see why there has to be compulsion. I mean, compulsion has nothing to do with it in my mind, that it's not optional or that it is optional. Say it's all optional. Why does that? I don't understand why that matters.
Okay.
What?
you don't follow me.
I don't understand what you don't understand.
Yeah. Okay. What I'm saying is that the case has nothing to do with whether or not tithing's voluntary. It has to do with whether or not.
That's the wrongdoing.
That's the linchpin of like the.
That's like the whole only reason you can say that there's fraud is that it's not optional.
The
donation has to be.
No.
Based on all the facts, that's what I would say.
Well,
it's not a knowing.
Yeah, they're misinformed. It's not. Nobody's saying that they have a gun to their head or that there's not. There's nobody saying that this is – voluntary is the wrong word is my point. Of course this is voluntary. Anybody who pays tithing is doing it of their own free will to pay tithing.
Well, okay. Where does the element in here – because I remember him various times in the interview he had with you guys about talking about how the British government had been defrauded because – you know, they're not paying the taxes of a corporation when they're actually a religion. Like, wasn't that part of his 116 pages?
Yeah, that was a separate issue though from the fraud element. He was talking about that in terms of why it would be in the public good for it to be
a
case for prosecution.
And why the public was could be considered a victim, or the government could be considered a victim as well. But that went after proving.
Yeah, that wasn't part of the summons at all. All
right. So the fraudulent aspect was the transaction between the member and the church. And then the public good aspect was the relationship between the church and the government in terms of taxes. That time. Okay.
Yeah. And it is interesting. As my understanding is in Europe and some other countries, they are not, the temples are not tax exempt because they don't provide a public service. They are so insular. And so that, again, would have been something that would have been nice maybe if, you know, to allege or to claim, but that's something that's not there in any.
Well, they just had that ruling. That was actually in England. They just had a ruling on that saying that the temple
it's not open to the public.
It's not a place of public worship, so the temple didn't enjoy the same tax privileges. They just that just got ruled on like in the last couple of weeks, and that was in England. So, but that's a separate. I mean, that's a completely separate issue than what we're talking about here.
It was a victory.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I just mean, had that not been the case, that's something that I would point to as say, what we want is our back taxes back because of this. I don't know.
I think it's still a PR disaster. Overall,
really,
it's a blip on the radar. Maybe
I think it's going to be turned. It's going to be spun. You're going to hear about this either directly or indirectly in conference coming up, and it's going to be See, we're seeing the same things now that we saw in Joseph Smith's time. The world is out to get us, but you know, no unhallowed hand can stop the things of God. It fits right into the narrative of persecution and resilience, and we're in the last days, and so, you know, get your supply together because it's coming.
Yeah, it's a lightning rod for retrenchment.
Yeah, I don't see it as a PR disaster.
Well, to me, TBM, they're not going to look into this very deeply. And so they're going to just get spoon-fed what the brethren say. And I think what Glenn said is exactly right. It'll be indirectly referenced in General Conference, and it will further cause the TBMs to retrench?
Well, they're sure as hell not going to address it directly because
no,
they don't want the members to know the ins and outs of this that it even happened. I think people may think that they're referencing it, and there may be kind of a backhanded reference to it, but it'll be so vague that it could be anything.
I'm not that confident, Matt. I can easily see it being mentioned. You know, there was recently, some of you may have heard of this case brought against our beloved prophet. And once again, we see what happens when an unhallowed hand tries to stop the progress of God.
Just like Joseph Smith was brought to court so many times.
We talked about this in our Kolob Shmolob discussion, how they can cherry pick parts of the King Follett discourse, and they're not worried about people going in there and digging up all the batshit crazy stuff. They'll just take what they say and accept it because this is what you want to hear.
Yeah, but you guys, okay, so you're looking at it all from inside the church. I mean, you're looking at the in-group message.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, in terms of an out-group message, publicly, that this is a PR disaster. It's just a disaster to put Mormon president fraud in the same headline and have it be splashed across the pages of major newspapers. That's a disaster right there.
But do you
because
think,
for every
do
Mormon you think, reading it, there's 1,000 non-Mormons reading it.
But what do you think the image is of the church outside the church anyway?
It's horrible, but that's not making it
yeah,
any better.
Exactly. Everyone looks at the church as a weird, like,
they're just gonna
culty
go, yeah.
group anyway.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Right.
What did you guys hope to get out of this whole case? Like, in a best case scenario, I mean, what was going to happen? This is, even if it went all the way, it was still going to cause retrenchment. Like, never in my case, in every case I've heard, when somebody disaffects from the church, it's never somebody coming in from the outside and shaking them up. It's the church pushing some sort of weird shit on them, and then as they're trying to swallow it, they realize that this is all bullshit, and they walk away. Like, it's the church's action is what's going to push its members away. It's never going to be something from the outside. They're just going to retrench more.
I think that's still an in-group. I think that's still part of the in-group message, though, that Scott was talking about.
Yeah,
what do you think was going to happen?
Even if it went all the way, do you think that would have had any effect on church membership or people inside the church?
No,
I mean, what do you think, Tom?
I think it could have an effect.
I think.
Oh, sure, it could have. Well, I mean, when you're saying go all the way,
if he was thrown in jail, people would probably start to notice. But,
yeah, I mean,
if he was convicted, yeah.
Yeah, if there were actually.
If it went to a jury trial.
If it went to a jury trial and he has to show up and he has to answer questions on each of these six things, and like it's proven in a court of law that the Book of Abraham was not a literal translation, that's a big deal. That's not something that's easy to sweep away. So like Jake, when you're talking about if it went all the way, what would the ramifications be? I think they're huge, actually, what it could be. And mm-hmm. if you were able to actually successfully demonstrate that there's fraud, it could have some implications with the way that tithing is structured, or things like that. There could have been, but I do think it's an interesting question. What did you expect to see come from it? But I'm still interested in what Scott was saying about the media nightmare outside of the church, because if I look at news stories like on Fox News or different places where this is being reported, I don't see the nightmare ish thing. Like, how does this, because everything that I've seen is saying disgruntled Mormon is unsuccessful in his attempt to take a shot at the church. And I don't see how that message, that spin, is a PR nightmare for the church.
Well, so that's what you're seeing now for the last month or however long. What you've been seeing is stuff like Mormon prophet summoned to answer fraud charges. So, if I'm reading the news and I see that the Jehovah's Witness leader is being summoned to answer fraud charges, I'm like, yeah, those guys are crazy, and then just kind of go to the next one, right?
Again, so
but you already thought they were crazy to start off with.
Yeah, I know. It's just reinforcing. It's just not giving any kind of.
It's good not a nightmare
for the church. Okay.
It's not a nightmare though, because you already think Jehovah's Witnesses are batshit crazy.
And Randy knows a thing or two about nightmares.
Yeah, I have.
It's not a It's not a PR hypnopompic experience. Is that the right word?
Hippopotamus.
Yeah. The hippopotamus and the rhinoceros.
So, what about this issue of the church taking the position that these are not factual truths? If the church emphasizer says anything, and members learn about this, the Book of Abraham, these other things, does that not potentially have an impact on members? I think it could.
I think it's
that
zero.
They would expect. You say zero?
Yeah.
I mean, what?
Yeah, nobody's going to care what some.
What some lawyer recorded. Said to try and weasel out of a case that shouldn't be in front of a judge anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree that if anybody did, for one thing, the hearing wasn't recorded, so it's never going to get. Or it's not public.
I thought there will be a transcription that comes out.
Yeah, well, it's. I mean,
I think it'll be available for pay, like you have to pay for it.
Really?
Yeah, that's. I read that somewhere on some fucking Facebook page.
Well, but regardless, like your point's correct. I think that what some church lawyer says or some UK lawyer representing the church says is or isn't a belief is going to matter for zero to anybody.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
if you think
come
about
back to the Joe Hinckley said, "Well, I don't know that we believe in that," and all right. The members were like, "Oh yeah, of course he does." So no,
right.
I'd be persuaded otherwise, but I think it's still something. It's something you can point to, and it's kind of like,
yes.
Well, all right, let me reverse myself. The B.H. Roberts hearing. I'm sorry, not the B.H. Roberts hearing. It's the
Reed Smoot.
Hearings.
Yeah. Reed Smoot, Joseph
really
F. Smith.
Good stuff there. People just. It.
Yeah,
it's still embarrassing. I mean, it's something.
Well, it's something. It's something that people on the fringe or going through faith crisis will come across. So maybe it could add to that
confirmation bias.
Just one more log on the fire.
Not confirmation bias, but just really? Add to the another data point for people that are looking to.
No, this is a great case study in confirmation bias.
It is.
Because all the people who were on the fringe and who were anti-Mormon said, "Oh my gosh, Tom Phillips' attorneys just killed them. The attorneys for the church just sucked and they knew nothing," versus the
they mispronounced the name of the church. Oh my God.
Right. Well, yeah. Hey, but look, like
no one cares.
We can't totally take ourselves off of the hook there either because
I'm owning it.
Yeah,
me
right.
too.
Good.
Episode
all right.
three, we all just like completely bought into it and it's on record and you know.
Well, episodes one and two, I think, more than three. We were a little more critical on three, but
yeah, three but we were a little more critical.
I wanted to ask you, Randy, because at the end of one of those, you said, "I don't know what the outcome's going to be, but I'm really glad that he did it." Like, do you still feel that way? And assuming that this is going to continue and that we're going to see more of this, just in a different form, are you applauding that as well, or are you kind of backing off of that statement?
I'm totally backing off of that statement. What I'm saying is. I'm glad that he did it. It made for an interesting discussion. The church is now on record for saying these are not truths; they are beliefs, which is what is nothing like what you experience in church. Everything is like I know, I know, I know. So, I mean, I think, and especially if Tom's not going to incur any financial. Loss to this or difficulties because
which
the judge,
I hope he doesn't. I mean, I really,
yeah, totally. Doesn't. I don't want him to suffer at all. I applaud his bravery, but at this point, I'm telling him officially, my advice is to let it go.
Well, that might be my advice too. But I like
insert Frozen song here.
Cole never bothered me anyway.
Yeah, right. but I want to see it continue. Like I'm a fan of it coming. You know, like Jake asked earlier, what do you want to see come of this if it goes all the way? I want to see it go further. I really do. So I mentioned earlier that I was looking through conference talks trying to find stuff on Monson, and what I did find was a talk that he gave 2005. The prophet Joseph Smith, teacher by example. The reason that he was arrested and sent to Carthage was that there had been an arrest warrant on trumped up charges.
He no doubt longed to be with them. However, he had been issued an arrest warrant on trumped up charges. Despite many appeals to Governor Ford, the charges were not dismissed.
So if you're saying that these charges are trumped up, is that a lie? Did we just catch you right there? If you can go in and look at the charges and go, oh no, each one of these was a legitimate charge. He's misrepresenting right there. He's spinning this in a way that's inaccurate. Could you take that as an example and say, tell me what those trumped up charges were, President Monson, or spokesman for President Monson, and shine a light on that a little bit more and get some official response on that? Because I think you have examples of this misrepresentation and this dishonest spin. And to be able to pull that out, bring it more to light, and get the story straight, I'm a fan of that. So if this continues to do that, I'm all for it.
Of course, we're all a fan of that.
Really? I thought you just said that you weren't anymore.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay, like, I was confused.
I just said that. Okay, so here's what I'm saying is that at this point in time in human history, you are not going to be able to put religion on trial.
Yeah.
You can't.
Right.
The UN, just not that many years ago, passed an anti-blasphemy law. It's fucking ridiculous. They passed an anti-blasphemy law. And you just cannot put religion on trial. Hopefully, my hope is that someday religion will become obsolete and disappear, and finally the human race can progress forward with the scientific method and so forth and remove dogma.
But I'm not going all the way to religion, Randy. I'm just talking specifically.
No,
I just did a Tom Randy.
Every fucking religion has bullshit that is verifiably false. Even the false religion of Scientology.
Even that one?
Seriously, Scientology?
Well, they call themselves the religion of Scientology. And that was a political move. Anyway, you can't, at this point in time in the human history, you cannot put religion on trial.
I was wrong when I was texting you before and said we didn't need you. We so do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shut up.
I'm serious.
Stop patronizing me.
No, I am dead serious.
I really hate being patronized.
And it's about at this point that our conversation moved completely away from the Tom Phillips story and went into a 20-minute tangent on Matt's most favorite invention in the whole wide world.
Oh, my God. Don't get Matt started on the bidet.
They're awesome.
Oh, they're so awesome.
Look, Brondell.com, use the coupon code THANKS. You get free shipping and 10% off. It's $224 out the door for the Swash 300. It will change your life.
Can this be like an ongoing segment where people talk about their experience, their most recent bidet experience?
Oh my gosh, dude! Listen, it's
this
the
episode
only thing
of Infants on Thrones. We've got new sponsorship.
No, like Matt
is on Thrones.
Hey.
It's
Matt.
Right there. It's right there in the name. That's
I can assure everybody that Matt has done his due diligence. So if you want to a bidet, consult Matt because he knows
it is.
Shit.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it was late. We went on like this for about 20 minutes. I'll spare you the gritty details. But you know what? We still have this summons of our own hanging over our head. And special thanks once again to Seb for putting that together. You knocked it out of the park again. So before we wrap it up, let's spend a few minutes discussing exactly how we should prepare ourselves for what's bound to be an epic struggle with or without the Brondell Swish 300 bidet seat, complete with seat warmer and remote control.
Here's the thing. The church clearly is emboldened by their victory in the UK. They found that the UK is the place where they found a friendly judiciary.
They're turning
so
the tides.
They decided to go on the offensive rather than the defensive and say, you know, let's go after those anti-Mormon podcasters out there who are doing so much damage. And so they go to the UK to come to us and get us to stop doing, you know, exposing the truth. And that's the frustrating thing.
Well, I read on RFM that somebody's brother's uncle's nephew works at the church law firm, Curt and McConkie, and they actually had a lot of extra money on this other UK case that they hadn't used. And so they just to use up the retainer, they were just going to file something else, and we were the targets of it, apparently.
Ooh, okay. So how are we going to prepare, though? Because they're claiming that we violated contract law. We violated our temple covenants, and what's our defense here, guys? We've got two attorneys here. How are we going to defend ourselves?
Well, wait a minute. So what is the anti-what clause?
Matt, I need you to keep me out of jail. I got a dental license to hold. Yeah. Come on, sack up. Yeah,
the anti
board in Missouri is not going to be happy about that.
Scott, don't start that shit, dude.
It's the anti-murmuring clause of the. Is that what it was?
Of 2009, right? Of 2009.
The Lehman and Lemuel clause.
Right.
Wow. That's in England?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just passed it. Yeah. 2009.
Wow.
So what are we going to. How are we going to prepare ourselves?
Well, I think that none of these things are things that we taught, it's just things that we believed, right?
Right. You can't prove what I believe or don't believe.
But they're pretty specific.
They're focusing on covenants or contracts that we've all agreed to, but we've all arguably broken. And so can they prove that we've broken each of the covenants?
Why did you guys drag me into this project? I didn't even want to come. I didn't want to do this shit.
Hey, you know what we've learned? We've learned that everybody loves your cussing.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
That's why you're our resident cusser.
And notice that they didn't put that in the complaint.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Unless that's part of the loud laughter. It might be the we violated the law of obedience.
Right. That's kind of a catch-all, right. Number two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we violated the rule that we would keep all the rules.
I think it's vexatious.
But have we really violated the law of chastity? Is it because of all our masturbation talk? Do you think that's what they're going for?
Well, maybe the swinger.
It could have been the swinger podcast. Maybe.
I think a bidet violates the law of chastity.
It's anal sex. It's penetration.
Oh yeah, no, there's a natural.
So here's my question about this lawsuit: is considering the fact that
not a lawsuit,
bizarre allegations against us.
So considering the fact that we really didn't enter these covenants.
Here's where I think we've got them, though. I don't think they can tie any of this to us because none of us used our real name when we made that covenant.
Boom.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah, my name.
It was a different name.
Yeah, I did.
So maybe Jesse, you're going to be the person who has to attend then on our behalf. So here's what you do. When you're standing in the court of law, ask the attorneys to prove to you that they are actual representatives of the truth and by showing you the signs and the tokens.
Right.
And that's your get out of jail free card, because they won't do it.
They can't.
It's too sacred.
It's too sacred to do in that place. And so they won't be able to prove that they're the people, that you know it, and I think we're good.
Not to show them except at the proper time and a place appointed to them.
Right. Which hopefully isn't courtroom number one, whatever that was in Tickleshire.
my plan E.
That's what I'm going to name my butthole after I get my bidet.
Tickleton?
You know, Scott?
Well, that's a lot better than Effington, Jake.
Scott. And here is where we spun completely out of control, if not a few minutes earlier. So anyway, we hope that you enjoyed this quickly assembled episode of Infants on Thrones, and we remind you to do all the stuff we normally remind you to do at the end of these things, and please, someone, anyone, closing prayer, fast.
Wake up the world for the conflict of justice. Millions shall know Brother Joseph again.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.